Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. What are you doing to create a unique business or service offering or value proposition? What do you do to stand out? How are you different? How do you compete in crowded market spaces? That's some of the stuff we're going to talk about during today's episode of Startup Hustle before I get into the guest and also the amazing accolades that we will be providing to today's guest. A quick reminder that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Go to Fullscale.io to learn more. If you're not aware, that's my company. We love talking to Startup Hustle listeners. So reach out. Let's find some solutions together. With me today, I've got another one of Kansas City's top startups. I'm really excited for today's guest. We're going to talk about some different things than we normally talk about. With me today, I've got Jeff Avelka, and he is the CEO of Beyond Warehousing. You can go to beyondwarehousing.com. If you want to save yourself the effort of all those key taps, just go down to the show notes and click that link. It's the fastest way to do it. I recommend that you go do that right now so you can learn more about his business while we talk about it. Without further ado, Jeff, welcome to Startup Hustle, and congrats on being a top Kansas City startup.
Awesome, Matt. Thanks for having me here. Look forward to the conversation today.
Yeah, well, let's start that with a little bit about your backstory and what brought you to taking us beyond warehousing.
Yeah, it was kind of an unconventional path to get into warehousing and supply chain to start with. I started out as an actuary, actually, and have a master's in HR. Had no intention of ever being in supply chain. During the recession of 2007, 2008, got an internship in supply chain and did that for 7 or 8 years, and then spent time with Amazon for about 8 years before I launched Beyond Warehousing in 2019.
You mentioned that 2008, 2009, that was the last time I tried to be a student as an adult, and the fifth college I dropped out of. Nice. But I remember at the time that was actually a top 10 business school or close to it at the time. And they were all adamant about supply chain logistics. And that was the big future and the big growth. And they weren't wrong about that. Now, when it comes to Beyond Warehousing, and, you know, here you are, you're a startup and in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and there's obviously a lot to figure out there. It sounds like you got your feet wet with, 3PL. Is that the category that you're in?
Yeah, we're in 3PL.
Third party logistics.
Yeah, yeah. So we're warehousing for other companies. That way they can focus on things like sales and marketing, product development, and not have to focus on, you know, the actual warehousing fulfillment of their orders or worry about that overhead. Do all that for them. So
is that the primary problem that you solve?
Yeah, that's the primary problem that we solve, is that a lot of people are really good at certain things and not necessarily good at others. So we're really focused on just taking that burden off of the company, and we've got dozens of years of experience between me and my partners, whether it's in manufacturing or at Amazon or military, moving things around. So we're experts at that. We're not experts at product development. Our customers are. So it kind of, that's kind of our value prop there.
So when we talk about creating, you know, a unique business, and you've obviously got to do something to stand out, because compared to, well, Amazon, are they your competitor?
No. Amazon, they own a lot of their own inventory. They do act as a conduit for a lot of our clients, even. They sell on Amazon, and then we'll ship stuff from our warehouses to the end customer, or we'll send it to an Amazon warehouse even for some of our customers. Our competitors are typically going to be smaller like us, somewhere between 100,000 to 10 million square feet of warehouse space, some of them local, some of them across the country. But there's about 27,000 3PL warehousing companies across the country.
So how do you make yourself unique among the main premise of what we need to get into.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you stand out?
So how we stand out, and I think some of this came from the fact that me and my partners hadn't been in 3PL before we got into this. But as we were looking at kind of how we wanted to be unique, we just kind of looked at what our core values are and looked at what was out there in the market. There's a lot of either poor customer service or a lack of transparency out there in the 3PL market. And we've really tried to just be honest, be upfront, deliver results, and just own our mistakes when they happen and tell our customers how we're going to fix it going forward, where that's not something that was prevalent within the industry. And what it's resulted in is a lot of just word of mouth marketing that's come from that. And just kind of generating that brand and that name out there that is a little different than a lot of 3PLs that are out there in the market. There's a lot of good players out there, but there's a lot of players that just maybe aren't a stand-up.
That poke a hole in your box with their forklift and don't admit it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's like a real thing. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on 3PL, but I've learned so much listening to Andrew Morgan's weekly show. I hear, he's been hosting an episode of Startup Hustle for 2.5 years now. And he specializes in helping people sell more stuff on Amazon. But with that, I've also learned that that's really expensive for sellers. I mean, you're talking like 30% of your sale, and sometimes more. And, I would assume that you may offer some options that could be a little more affordable in some cases.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that we're the cheapest out there, but what we are is that we do take good care of your product, and you're in a clean warehouse. You get service on time, so that way you're not dinged by your vendors and stuff like that. And those are kind of your intangibles that we've really focused on and tried to become experts on, is just delivering that high level of service that you don't necessarily get from everyone in that market.
Yeah. And the other part of the experience I have is I used to work for Roland, which is the world's largest maker of electronic musical instruments, $5 billion a year in sales. They sell a lot of stuff. I mean, you're talking like their warehouse in LA is like a couple city blocks, basically.
Right.
And so dealing with clients or accounts that I had in 13 different states, when I mentioned the forklift in the box, like that's a real thing. Like, I worked in the piano and keyboard division, and those were big boxes. And that was probably the most common, like, quote, problem we had was damage or error in delivery. And, you say, well, how does a forklift poke a hole in it? Well, these machines are picking these boxes up and moving around and whatever, and they do a lot of them, and occasionally you're going to mess them up. And with that, oh my God, man, trying to like get someone to take any kind of responsibility for it, it was just like a daisy chain of, didn't do it.
Yeah.
And on some levels, like, I would spend way too much time, or people at headquarters would, like, we didn't ship this out like this.
Right.
And the buyer didn't want to get something with a hole in it. So how do we fix that? So, the struggle's real on that stuff. So it's good to hear that you take it, people, if you mess something up, take responsibility for it.
And we've got a whole process around that where we call it OTAR, Operational Technical After Action Review, where when we have either it's a customer reported issue or one that we find internally, we document it. And then we've got a process that we do a five whys on it, get to what the root cause was and figure out, is there something we need to change in our process to fix that going forward, communicate that back to the clients, and hopefully don't repeat it again. And that's been a big selling point for us, actually, too. We've pulled that up in sales sales meetings with prospects, and they're like, is that for the week? No, that's for the year. No kidding. So just seeing that we dig into that and kind of have that ownership there, it is different. And it's, when you're busy, it's hard to dig into things like that. But if you don't get to those root causes of problems, they're just going to repeat themselves, and they're going to, you know, a snowflake's going to turn into an avalanche. So we just want to prevent the avalanche there.
So you mentioned you have a military background.
I don't, but one of my partners has a military background.
And I was curious because, well, their military is obviously very systematic.
Yes.
And I find that people that come out of military training or background are systematic in many ways because, how has that had an effect on the way you do things?
My partner, Cam, he is our VP of operations. He's been my right-hand man at various companies over the last decade. He is very structured and very to the point, and also forces the ownership there. And I think that has driven a lot of just the culture and what the product is that we offer.
When you say ownership, like there is a military principle, extreme ownership, mm-hmm. which says there's no bad teams, only bad leaders. Is that similar to what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's spot on with kind of what Cam's approach is. So, always been glad to have him at my side. So,
And I think that that's a very important part of leadership because I don't know, man, it's easy to blame. And mm-hmm. and it's easy to have a culture of blame. And that's kind of what I was mentioning with that daisy chain of we didn't do it. And it's like, man, you know, like someone did it.
Yeah.
Where?
And a lot of that. So not only did Cam pull that from military, just Amazon's a beast. And I'm glad I spent 8 years there. But one of their leadership principles is ownership. And we tried to pull as much of the good stuff from our Amazon days and pull it into Beyond Warehousing, you know, doing the right thing.
Efficiency. I never worked at Amazon, but as I've helped people build businesses and do a lot of stuff over the years, I've actually taken some of their principles that I've just observed as an observer.
Mm-hmm.
Like you talk about like steps, like the amount of literally like footsteps.
Yes.
Like I was working with one of our oldest clients that we built technology for, but the thing we build for them has a component that operates in their store. And I was watching their employees walk crisscrosses across the, you know, and I'm like, well, no wonder this stuff's piling up here because you have to take so many footsteps. And they're like, yeah, but it only takes a minute. I'm like, yeah, but you do it. 147 times a day. And if you do the math on that, and this person's making this amount, and they're like, well, that's still not this much. Okay, well, this you're paying $74,000 a year for people to walk circles around your store if you just put something closer. And like Amazon's like super precise. So even talk about Roland was like that. Mm-hmm. So the Japanese manufacturing was way ahead of a lot of stuff that you see now with like the robot process stuff. So at the Roland factory, they had like little bins that when you put your hand in it, it
would register that you put that
you have one less bolt, one less screw, one less part. And then they had a little robot cart that came around and had your refills for you.
Yeah. The automation that Amazon's kind of pushed in the industry in general.
That was 15 years ago at the Roland factory. Yeah. And then I've seen videos of some of the other stuff. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of things moving that could crash into each other.
Yeah. it's an impressive dance to watch for sure.
Right. So, okay. So you look at 3PL and, you know, so typically what does your typical client look like? Like, why are they choosing you or like, mm-hmm. what's for them? So we have integrity, we have efficiency, we have some of that, but where there's still let me do the math. You still have 26,999 competitors.
Yeah.
How do you grow and scale and continue to, you know, find people that want the value you provide?
Yeah. So kind of an ideal customer, right, is kind of your mid-sized company that overhead doesn't investing in a warehouse, investing in those people, managing those people, it doesn't make sense for them, right? They're just not at a scale that they can do that. So kind of that mid-sized company is kind of that ideal client, but why they choose us over some of our competitors is starts with just operational experience, but then is the technology we have around it. So having our warehouse management system, making sure that our customers can easily see and be transparent on here's what we shipped, here's where your stuff is, here's where your inventory is, being able to show that we can maintain that accuracy of inventory for them, that we can ship things out on time for them. Like, we're an extension of their business and we know that and we take it to heart. If we fuck something up, it doesn't look bad on me.
It looks bad on your client.
Yeah, it looks bad on the client. I mean,
which through association kind of looks bad to you, to your client, but
So it looks bad at me to my client, but they're not the ones that are writing reviews on Google about
their product. It's a heartbreaking feeling. Yeah. Like, and for those of you listening, if you haven't experienced that, you talk about, okay, so I'll use my Roland example and you make a sale to someone, they're excited that it comes in and then it comes in damaged or it's late mm-hmm. or whatever. And all that stuff, your business can do a perfect job. And then it gets to the point where it's either out of your hands or somewhat out of your hands and they can leave you looking like clowns.
Yeah.
And guess what? Your buyer's going to blame you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
They don't know that I sit in the middle. There's nothing that lets them know that Beyond Warehousing sits in the middle.
Yeah. I would imagine the less visible you are, and the
better off it is.
Yeah, sure.
I'm a big believer. If it's a good thing, if I never hear from my clients,
dude. Same with mine. Like,
you only hear if there's a problem.
True, and we service full scale services like 50 different tech companies. Well, kind of like yours, And you need to scale a team quickly. Your business is growing quickly, and the reality is there's 300,000 open tech jobs because we don't have enough people to do the tech jobs. Mm-hmm. So how do you find the right people? But for us, our clients end up managing people that are on their team, and we check in with them because we also don't want to hear from our clients after they're already pissed if that were to come up. So there's like a healthy little balance between invisibility and like maybe semi-invisibility.
Yeah, it's good for us to have the weekly or monthly check-ins, make sure everything's going good, just so we can get in front of if there are any problems, make sure that we have that productive conversation. So we can get that on our OTAR list. And
you say OTAR, O-T-A-R?
Yeah, what O-T-A-R.
Does that stand, what does that stand for?
Operational again? Tactical After Action Review.
Okay.
So we call it OTAR for
Operational
short.
Tactical After
Action Review. So something has happened.
Oh, there's two A's.
Two A's.
I see.
So something's happened. Let's dig into why.
That almost sounds like I bet there's a city named OTAR somewhere.
There probably
somewhere
is
near somewhere. Saudi Arabia or something like that. Probably. So if you're listening from the Middle East, reach out and let me know if we're right. We've had listeners in 194 countries. We have a harder time figuring out who we're still missing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's amazing. So if my business partner, Full Scale, Matt Watson, was here, he would actually... I know what he'd say. It's like, dude, I love boring businesses. And I'm not saying that, but
it is.
Dude, these are like the little things that grind the gears that like are so key though, when it comes to the success. And like, there's so much, oh man, if you've never been around or worked near or experienced or witnessed a busy warehouse, there's a lot, man.
Oh, it's humming.
There's a lot. And you talk about that, like how difficult is it to keep track of everything? Cause you talk about that, like that transparency. Well, one thing that'll kill your sale is telling someone's in stock and then you have to collect their money and you have to go back and tell them it's not.
Right.
Cause then you look like you're full of shit.
Right.
So, I mean, what does that look like?
And a big part of it is making sure that we have a good warehouse management system and partner on that. So we're very big on what we call double scan verification. So something comes in, I scan the barcode, make sure it's the right thing. It goes into the database and it says, you received X, you're supposed to have Y, you got to go back and check it again, right? And so each step of the process, we're double checking it each time before it goes out, because that's the best way for us to make sure that things are accurate. Because if it's not, we talked about this earlier, if your inventory is inaccurate, that's a problem, because then now you're trying to sell something that you can't.
Yeah.
Or it goes the opposite way.
Or you
thought you sold everything. And there's then four left.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really hard to sell four of widgets or whatever.
Yeah.
So just making sure that we've got that, those good systems in place, that we've got the good technology around it. That helps ensure that, we just keep that accuracy there. And making sure that there's visibility to, our clients, 24/7 visibility. And they can get on anytime. Some of them just, they're going to be more hands-on. They want to dig into things, which I think is awesome. And some of them are like, you guys go and do your thing. And we'll just make sure things are at the end of the year, good at the end of the year. But as long as I don't have any problems, I'm not going to really spend a whole lot of time on you guys. I know that I can go into your system and look at any time.
Once again, with me today, I've got Jeff Avelka. He is the CEO of Beyond Warehousing, who is included in Startup Hustle's 2023 Top Kansas City Startups. He's definitely an expert on the subject. Speaking of experts, finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Fullscale.io. We're kind of in the 3PL business in some regards too. Oh, like yeah. You talk about our platform as well, matching people up with the right things, but then there's a management component. And that's tricky. And that's actually what I want to talk to you about, because you got some cool quotes here that our production team laid out. One of which is, you know, talking about how you put people first, and that actually starts with avoiding temporary labor, which allows you to invest in training and growth, incentivize high performance and continuous improvement. That isn't a quote that I would expect to hear from someone that employed warehouse.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
that's unique and different right there.
It is. A lot of our competitors do. And that's kind of one of those things that separates us, right? Yeah. We really try to push that, because bringing people in, not only does it decrease and treating them well, not only does it decrease the costs associated with retraining and hiring and stuff like that, but we try to really make it a place where we understand that we're their livelihood. We want them to be able to come to work, want to work there, tell their friends when I need to hire someone, you know what, Bob should come and work for us too. But we think that's by paying them a living wage, giving really good benefits, and just treating with respect, asking their opinions, understanding what challenges they're having there, and just really trying to be servant leaders to them. I think people have the right to come into work and enjoy what they do every day. And warehouse, being in a warehouse is tough, man.
No, that's thankless work. Yeah. I mean, on a lot of days. And that's why I think it's important that everything you just said is really checked boxes that are on our core principles at my company as well. And, you know, and we had a 94% employee retention rate last year, which that's awesome. In 2022, people think I'm full of shit when I tell them that. They're like, you're lying. I'm like, right. No, I'm not. You know, actually, and if you look at, we actually had negative churn because we grew.
Right.
So, I mean, we had 75 more employees at the end of the year than we had at the beginning of the year. And but with that, the key to it is, well, I 100 the hear from your people.
Yeah.
I do these like town hall things. I put out surveys, you know, I and it's kind of funny because I'm known for answering all the questions no matter what. So I encourage that. But sometimes I'll get an occasional one. Like the funniest one was, hey, Matt, do you drink? Want to get wasted? And I was like, you know, so like, I'll still answer the funny ones, but man, I refer to keeping your finger on the pulse of your business. Mm-hmm. And I think that if your company's going to be big, and you told us before you recorded, you just took over, you're over 1 million square feet,
right?
You're growing really quickly. And the thing is these culture problems, if you let them grow at the rate at your rapidly growing company, then you're going to rapidly have a culture problem.
Yeah.
And those are really hard to unwind. And you know, and if your people aren't, your people are at your company are your biggest asset.
Exactly. Yeah. And we found, in our past that it takes about twice as long to undo a bad culture than it took to make the bad culture.
Yeah.
So really want to stay on top of it. We actually had discussions about this morning, just around our growth and how do we make sure that we're replicating that great, culture that we had at our first building as we go into a second building and a third building and a fourth building.
Which, by the way, makes that at not just a little bit harder. It's exponential because different locations. And I know this because I have to travel halfway around the world to go to that office.
Yeah,
literally on the opposite side of the planet.
Yeah. So and how do you keep the cool vibe that you have here out there?
Yeah. And that's an issue. And then, man, I'll tell you what really got, so we're all remote now because the company's 5 years old. Pandemic was halfway through the timeline. Mm-hmm. We got really good at like our in office logistics. And then we had to get really good at remote logistics. And that's why when it came back to like, hey, we could open up again, we're like, yeah, we're not doing that. Like we just spent 2.5 years getting really good at being fully remote, but we built a management platform similar to like, hey, look, if you can manage and keep track of productivity and be accountable for that stuff, like, you know, it doesn't have to be complex. Like in our platform, we have a simple thing that anybody that works at Full Scale has a daily report they fill out. It takes 5 minutes. What'd you do today? What are you doing tomorrow? Do you have any roadblocks?
Right.
And that will go to managers. It will go to clients. And like some of our clients, like actually we didn't have a problem with the daily reports coming. We had the fact that some of our clients' teams grew so fast. They're like, can you consolidate this? Cause I get 16 emails. We're like, yeah, we'll get on that. But that simple bit of communication across multiple locations or multiple countries, or in our case, also multiple time zones, is really invaluable. Because if you can't see the people that you're working with or for, it sure does help to just give them some idea of what you're doing with the team.
Right. No, we were talking before out there that just every 3 to 6 months, we're hitting that new level of a company as we're growing so fast that we kind of have to recreate ourselves and figure out things like where... Well, man, communication works when there's 8 of us sitting around the table. How do you change the communication as you're in 2 buildings, 3 buildings, 4 buildings? And just being very mindful and purposeful around what you're doing. And it has to become part of a pattern. It has to become just part of your life that this is what we do to continue to push this and keep that culture going.
Yeah, that constant state of reinvention, I think, is important because – you don't have everything figured out. None of us do.
No.
Some of us may be doing better at acting like we do, but we don't. And yeah, you know, so one of the most valuable things that someone said to me while recording, have you ever heard, you know what Linktree is?
No.
So it's basically, if you look at it, Linktree is a link that you could go to that is essentially like a link directory.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Now, when Instagram came out and became popular, Instagram only lets you have one link in your profile. So Linktree really blew up. And they have tens of millions of users, like huge company, because you can only in the Startup Hustle podcast Instagram, if you're going to only click one thing, I'd maybe give you an option of stuff. So with that, I had the CTO, his name's Zach, on here, and I asked him, I said, well, what's one of the, he had a very impressive work history prior to being the CTO at Linktree. And he said, I asked him, what's the most valuable thing you've learned being around rapidly growing companies? And he said, coming to the realization that sometimes the people that got you from level 0 to 10 aren't the same people that will get you from level 11 to 5,000.
Right.
Which stings a little bit.
Yeah. Cause you love those levels. People.
Yes.
They got
yes,
you to 10.
Yes. And at the same time, like it's tough, and entrepreneurship's filled with tough reality. And sometimes that's also reinvention of culture and like a lot of different stuff. So, you know, so I'll ask my favorite question, you know, so that's a problem to solve, but what's the biggest problem you're trying to solve at your business right now?
The biggest problem we're trying to solve is, honestly, it's just around the how to scale effectively and in a responsible manner. Like, there's a combination of how much debt do you take on, versus how much do you want to bring in revenue versus how much do you want to hire to be able to scale up. And it's a balancing act between all of them. And honestly, that's the biggest challenge we're running into right now. I feel like our operation does a great job servicing our customers. Our account management team does a great job making sure that our customers are good, but you know, IT people are expensive, right? And there is an IT backbone to this. And a lot of it is around how fast can you scale the IT structure on that? How fast can you bring on new customers in a way that doesn't leave a bad first impression. So I think, you know, we've grown quickly. I think there's going to be a, I won't call it leveling off, but not quite as steep over the next year or so, just so we can kind of recollect that and kind of refine our processes to make it so they are more scalable. So I can bring on 15 clients in a month, which I just can't do right now, just because we're still building out those processes. We're still building out expertise on our team. But it's definitely a challenge to have that responsible growth. I want more top line revenue. I want more EBITDA. But at the same time, I got to make sure that we do it in a way that services our customers and that it doesn't cost me too much.
Your business, similar to mine, is truly driven by people, and in your case, space, which is very difficult to scale. And that's you know, so, you know, scalability is that buzzword that's around. I hear people talking about how their business is scalable, and I'm like, is it? Because in a lot of, because in your case, like, you actually have to have physical space to put stuff. And if it doesn't exist, you can't sell it unless you're planning on using the sidewalk. And the fact of the matter, we'll go get more space. Okay, well, that takes time. It might take, there's a lot of shit.
There's a lot of money. You got to put in IT infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
For me, I got to buy racking. I got to buy material handling equipment. It's not cheap to open a new building.
No. And that's, well, that's one of the things that actually the pandemic did us a favor, because it pushed us away from a real estate model, because everybody used to come to work every day, but our employees didn't want to, because in the Philippines, traffic's terrible. So people were, you know, spending over an hour each way on the way to work. But we had kind of built this expectation that people were in the same spot, blah, blah, blah. I was terrified productivity would drop, or productivity actually shot up, because it's totally logical as well. You give people that 2 hours a day back.
Oh, yeah.
And also, like, if you're like, hey, I got to get on this bus, I got to get home, I got to do this by this time or whatever. Well, you shut the laptop, you maybe don't work on it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we look for really passionate people. So that also bothers them. It's like an unsolved problem. Right. You know, you're just, God, I'm like, yeah, there's something.
You got probably another hour out of them now.
And it's not even expected. It's a lot of it they want to.
Right.
I didn't say work more, but I was concerned about that. And it really, I don't know. You solve all these things with good communication. But yeah, the scalability for people driven things. And we were talking about that before we hit record. You know, in 2022, for a 2 to 3 month period, I had a waiting list for clients at Full Scale, which people kept telling me. They're like, oh, dude, that's great. I'm like, no, it's fucking terrible. They're like, what do you mean? You're sold to capacity. I'm like, yeah, I also have salespeople, marketing people, a whole bunch of people that, I mean, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, you could work on the next clients. I'm like, it's a little more complex than that. And, you know, so some of that's, and you talk about that, and I do want to say that it is okay to, especially early in fast growing companies, to have a start stop mentality, because you're doing the right thing by tapping the brakes, because if the vehicle gets out of control and goes off into the shoulder or does whatever, that's a lot worse scenario than feeling like you're the old lady driver on the highway.
That's a great analogy.
Done it a bunch at Full Scale. Like, we've had a lot of start stop moments, and like some of that, like at one point, so we had 100 employees after a year, which is crazy. And we were close to 200 after 2 years. And then we kind of ran into the pandemic. But, you know, at one point of about a year and a half, like, we just told people, like, hey, we're gonna have to get back with you, because it, you know, we wanted to address some culture and leadership issues that we knew were gonna take part. Because, I mean, dude, you don't know what you don't know. Like, until a real crystal ball is invented and works, and we can, like, because that was another thing too. Like, we ramped up a little bit. So here's, you want to talk about a funny story about space. This is not funny. It's so fucking painful. So, 3 months before the pandemic, anticipating growth. And at that, and so our office, there was a floor available where our office is, and we signed a 5-year lease on it, and we're beginning to outfit it. And then the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. We will get to the 5-year point of that lease and never have done business one day or 1 minute on that floor. It will cost me over $1 million. And that's hazy crystal ball stuff right there. Cause you talk about, like, we knew we'd need it. We're like, if we don't get it, we're not going to grow. And then we were also looking, if we don't get it in this building, we're going to have a whole nother issue because we got to go find it somewhere. Right. Now, big spaces are sometimes hard to find. Mm-hmm. And warehouse might be a little different, but when it comes to like office stuff, because that can get wildly expensive places. And, you know, so yeah, anyway, the start stop thing, it's okay, people. Like, I'm really of the, and the pandemic changed my whole outlook on a lot of it. I'm actually kind of a riverboat gambler as an entrepreneur in a lot of days, to take a lot of chances to try a lot of different weird shit. But I've also developed an appreciation for that conservative nature. Like, don't move out of the place you're in until you've seen all of it on some days. Mm-hmm. But yeah, be responsible, because you have too much debt, too much burden, too much of that. You get the wrong couple things that happen, like what did in 2020. And
yeah, you can be hosed.
There's a lot of people out of business for that reason.
We're running the same thing with the recession coming here. Like, supply chains change. There's a lot of inventory just sitting there right now.
Oh yeah.
And me, along with most of my customers, I think hope that their inventory comes down in coming years, because retailers start buying things again at higher quantities, and consumers start buying more. So I also don't want to scale too much and have a bunch of space sitting open, because now the economy is moving at a faster speed again, and companies are able to hold less inventory at that point and turn it faster. They do that, then I've got a whole bunch of space just sitting empty.
We'll never get it right, Jeff. I've come to the conclusion that you have to make a decision. Yep. And on some levels, people, it's as scientific as you fucking hope for the best. I mean, and that's kind of the truth.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, like, but also, like, I do want to key that importance part, because I mean, overall, I'm not like a super conservative dude mm-hmm. when it comes to a lot. I'm very aggressive with my business and my growth, but at the same time, there are things that can sink the ship.
Right.
Sure. Those are the things we want to avoid. Now, as a quick reminder, if you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, Full Scale can help. We have the people, the platform, and the process to help you build and manage a team of experts. Go to fullscale.io. All you need to do is answer a few questions and let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Full Scale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. All right, so here we are at the end of, and once again, congrats on making our list.
Thank you,
and congrats on being on the show. Like, here locally, I think there's a lot of people that consider being a Startup Hustle guest a rite of passage.
Yeah, so, it's awesome. I was really glad, and so was my team when we got the notification. So,
and that's an acknowledgement. You know, we talked about lists earlier, and lists are funky. So, you know, I won this award from Forbes a couple years ago, and I pull up at the bank and I was trying to shove it in that little tube at the mm-hmm. drive-thru, and it wouldn't fit in. They're like, come in the lobby. I'm trying to shove it under the window. They're like, Mr. DeCourcy, you cannot deposit this award in the bank. And I was like, oh, you're right. That didn't really happen, but
it's a good story.
Yeah. It's well, the importance is like, you create your success in your business. And mm-hmm. like, so I love acknowledgement, but at the same time, a lot of people are frustrated about it sometimes because lists are weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get into that. I've won awards from major places, and then I can't win them locally because all my employees are in the Philippines. And
sure. I'll take
people don't
whatever,
like doing
I'll take
that.
Whatever list you want.
There you go. Me, there you know? Go. We'll put you on all the lists then. Congratulations, Jeff. You're on all the lists now. you know, what's a funny thing I've really learned about a lot of these lists is so many of them, like, you get that, like, you'll get the, hey, you're on the list. And mm-hmm. then you're like, cool. And then they reply like, for $7,000, we'll be able to complete your listing. And you're like, fuck you, man.
Yeah,
like,
I get those all the time.
Oh my God.
I've been recognized as a top 10 warehouse in the country.
Yeah.
Yes. For $5,000.
Yeah. Or more.
Yeah.
I got one. I keep getting one that keeps asking, invite me to be on a PBS documentary. Yeah, except for they want $28,000 to produce it. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. They're like, but it's with Dennis Quaid. I'm like, who? I know who that is, but I don't care. All right. So here we are at the end of the show. Thanks for joining me, man. I like supply chain logistics. When I do that, I usually do the top startups list with Lauren Conaway, and she always makes me talk about the ones that do supply chain logistics. Oh, I'm not sure why. I mean,
she does a great job over there.
Lauren's awesome and dynamic, but doesn't like talking about supply chain logistics. Now, speaking of talking, it's time for the Founders Freestyle, where I give my guests that are founding team members an opportunity to have the mic.
Yeah.
How are you going to use that time, Jeff?
I wish I had a poem or some cool rap lyrics. I would have gone back to my 90s lyrics or something.
Hey, but you can do that.
A couple of things that just wanted to come back and rehash. We talked about putting people first. I think that's super important. Yeah. One of the things that I forgot to mention on that is we're as part of taking care of our people, we've definitely had people that have had struggles. We've got a kind of a fund that through various things that aren't necessarily business structures or part of the business that we collect. And then when people have a need that we can tap into that, kids' Christmas presents or I can't get to work because
car's broken.
Yeah. You know, let me help you out here. And I think that's important. And I think it creates some loyalty there, but yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show. It's a big honor for us and, just thanks, man.
Well, thanks for coming, man. BeyondWarehousing.com. You know, you mentioned the importance of people first and I think that's key. We do something similar at Full Scale. We have a fund that we actually hadn't created and then a huge typhoon hit. At the end of 20, so we came in into 2022. At 2 weeks prior to that, a devastating typhoon hit the city most of our employees are, and we had people we had to spring into action in a hurry. We had to relocate six families because they're like had no roof. And we did it because and that was heartbreaking. It happened right before Christmas, which didn't really help the whole vibe.
Right.
You know, it's like, shit, but I got it, you know, like, and we did that. I'm a big believer in giving without expectation of return.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that created a whole lot of goodwill in the company because our employees saw that it wasn't all about us.
Right.
And, for those of you listening, don't underestimate how important that is because no one wants to feel like a cog in a machine. They want to be heard. They want to be respected.
Treat like a person.
And realistically, like one of the things, so we've built this amazing brand in the Philippines. You know why? Because it's fucking cool to work at our company.
Yeah.
Right. We have clubs and do different things. We created a company holiday called Outreach Day where you get paid to come do a full day of one of like 10 to 12 really well-sponsored community outreach events. Dude, we planted like thousands of trees. We cleaned up a mile of beach last year. We adopted an eagle.
Eagle.
I didn't even know that until they told me we got to name it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. So yeah. So we.
What'd you name it?
Well, we let the employees pick a name and then I picked one. Yeah. So C#. Is a coding language C, you know, hashtags pronounced C#. So that overwhelmingly won we have a lot of C# developers. I kind of underestimated that. And then I had to come up with my version. So, and I didn't even do it grammatically correct. So Po is sir in the Philippines and guapo, similar to Spanish, means handsome. I was like, dude, that's Po guapo, man. Cause it was a very majestic bird. I learned later it should be Quapo Po. So I showed how ignorant that I was, but C# won in a landslide and we had a big company party.
Nice.
Last year, you talk about that though. Like we flew people in from different places and got everyone into it. It was expensive. It required a lot of work. Very happy to have done it because it was, it was fun. It was cool. Like we did a theme. They did House of Codes. So it was like a Game of Thrones kind of thing, but based around that. And hey, look, if you have a fun place to work, where people aren't like terrified or like regretfully coming in again, where they should have quit yesterday, going to keep people around. And I really think that that is like a key, if not the key component. Well, dude, if you get away from that, reputation management's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, because trust me, even the least technical people know how to Google your company. And they'll figure it out. And it's just hard to overcome that stuff. So do the right thing, people, and your business will be able to grow fast. Jeff, I'll catch up with you down the road.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.